Season's greetings to all, and to all a warm welcome to the show where we take a nostalgic trip through an entire series, one season at a time, and consider them through a modern lens. I'm one of your regular hosts, Jack, alongside my international friend and co-host, Tony. This is TV we admired when it first aired, and this is the podcast where we test whether it stands the test of time. Welcome back to the Hellmouth, everyone, for binging Buffy. So, where do we go from here?
By the way, interrupting the intro script. I love that you did that. I was hoping you'd sing it. All right, I'll shut up. Please. Well,
considering the continually breaking news, we feel like we have to comment on the show's creator and the controversy surrounding his reportedly deplorable actions. In fact, we discussed whether we should even carry on with our look back at the series, but ultimately decided that because it takes much more than one man to make a show, especially one that was such a milestone in its day as Buffy, that it shouldn't take one man to break a show too. Nobody could put it better than the embodiment of Buffy, Sarah Michelle Gellar herself. While I'm proud to have my name associated with Buffy Summers, I don't want to be forever associated with the name Joss Whedon. We stand all those who suffered abuse, and we will continue to talk about Buffy as a show from a myriad of creators and talented people.
Well said, my friend. And I agree. I think that, if I remember correctly, and you had just sent an article to me not that long ago, and I think we should link to some of the reading that we've been doing.
Don't you think? Yeah, nice idea.
Yeah. Well, one of the things was, I know for sure, because as we talked last month, I saw the original movie in the theater, which bombed, by the way. And it was actually Marty Noxon who resurrected the idea, who brought Joss back. The show is going to happen with or without him. I think she thought it was wise to bring him in just because it was, his creation, but it was her idea. And she is the co-executive producer. She is the person who created it for TV. She wrote and directed a lot of the early episodes and throughout the series and was there. So it isn't, she was equal parts responsible for its success as him. So I think that's important to bring that up as well. So
yeah.
What do you make to all the stuff, the articles we've been sending back and forth to each other? Was there anything? I love that the quote from Sarah herself. I think that says it all. But I do think it's worth commenting on, what other folks have said and the idea that there's so many people for whom Buffy has, women in particular, gave them power that they didn't know they had. Queer women. Buffy is such a feminist icon, but with Tara and Willow and Kennedy down the line, and there's just so much great stuff that came out of it. How do you personally balance that teeter totter?
Yeah, I mean, I think we don't want to tread over old ground, do we? We were last week. I think at last episode, sorry. I think the most interesting thing I've read around the idea of should we continue to consume Buffy and or other media by Joss Whedon and people of this type who these stories come out about is the idea of hero worship. And I think, I've fallen foul of this too, of like putting people up on a pedestal and saying Buffy is because of Joss Whedon, Firefly is because of Joss Whedon. I definitely have done that. And, only a few months ago when you and I met, we were podcasting about Firefly, the comics, and perhaps fell into the trap of doing that a little bit during that podcast. And I think that's where a switch has gone in my mind through all of this, to remember that although there may be a name that's being pushed forward, there's so many other people behind making it as wonderful as it is, from other executive producers, from other writers, from the people performing the characters, and particularly in this show when it went on for 7 seasons, clearly, people started to have a voice in how they were being depicted, especially Sarah Michelle Gellar, of all people. The things that have come out about him since we first spoke about this a month ago seems to have got worse and worse.
Yep.
And he's got more and more of a dick, to use our word from last episode.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel like I want to celebrate the show because there's so much about it that is still worth celebrating, but perhaps try and leave his name out of it a little bit.
I agree. I think we'll have to. I mean, that's the thing. As part of the, as you said in our intro, we want to look through all these shows through a modern lens. You know, as we're, and once we're done with the with Buffy and Angel, you know, we're going to do Sliders. I would love to go back and look at the original series of Star Trek. Those the original series, and you know, I think those probably hold up really well in a modern lens because of how progressive Gene Roddenberry was. And so, you know, I think we'll have to talk about some of the problematic things, but I also think that's what makes the show worth doing, is it's people like us who don't, you know, we like to consume, you know, media and just like take our brains out. But we also, like every time you watch something, you pretty much write a review. And sometimes it's just like, you know, a couple of lines, but it's really, it's you having that thought and you can't shut that part of your brain off. So I think this is the only way for us to really truly enjoy it. So I agree. We're it's not going to be about hero worship of him. His name will have to come up simply because when the problematic stuff comes up, we'll have to talk about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And that lens now is so interesting. And we're going to touch upon it today with a couple of the episodes that are in season two, where, the writing and the dialogue and the situations that you're found in take on a whole different connotation now.
Yeah. Yes. Maybe. Absolutely. All right. Well, do you feel good about that?
I think so. Yeah. I think, you know, I think we did some heavy lifting last episode, and I think as long as we're on the same page, and hopefully those that are listening feel the same. I had an interesting chat with my sister last night because she has gone through a similar thing. We grew up, we're a couple of years apart, so we grew up, you know, consuming the same stuff, and she has a very strong opinion, and bringing it from a female's perspective as well was really interesting, and to get that so close to you in our recording really helped me in this thought process. So yeah, I feel comfortable moving forward with where we've got to.
Yeah, I do too. I think I've heard from some people who reached out to me and said, oh, I thought you guys handled that perfectly, and you know, it's not about him, and it's different. Like we said last month, it's not about, he's not on the screen. We're not looking at him, which, and again, the terrible things that he's done aren't the worst things that anybody could have done. And I'm not justifying anything he did, but I feel like if those were the things that came to light, then I think we probably would have moved on and this would be the beginning of Sliders. But because that isn't the case, you know, here we are. So, although I can't wait for that. I love
absolutely,
that.
Absolutely, yeah. So you much wanted that excuse.
That's right. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely right. Okay, so cool. All right, well, let's move on to Buffy season two. And right. Let's, once again, would you like to hear some cool Buffy music here?
Oh, definitely.
All right, here we go. Buffy season two. Well, what is your memory of season two? In particular, like, you know, how did this rewatch shake your brain a little? You're like, what? I forgot about that one.
Yeah. Two doesn't feel as strong in my memory as one did. I don't know why. Despite obviously there being a leap in quality. Two, I think when it was aired here, I think one and two just aired together.
Oh, so I think
like season one finished, but because I was watching it on BBC, because we were behind, it just kind of went straight into season two. So maybe that's why it all just kind of became one big long opening season for me. The main arc of the show is the thing that I remember really strongly. And I remember there being a couple of episodes that when it first aired thinking were really good and really enjoyed. And I wondered whether they would hold up on this watch, one being Bewitched, Bothered and Bewildered. At the time, you know, that was a standalone funny episode which was doing its own thing, and you know, and again, in light of everything that's going on, I thought that's going to be interesting. I remember very strongly the advancement of kind of character in this season, particularly Willow, Buffy and Angel's relationship. Are the kind of the strongest parts of character development, I think, in this season. Sadly, we lose some people along the way. But on the watch recently, the thing that I've been most reminded of is Sarah Michelle Gellar as an entity in this season. I think, you know, I'll go into it more when we do our kind of what is it like watching it now. But I think when I was 17, I watched Buffy and I watched Sarah Michelle Gellar with a different lens and I'm watching it now as a 41-year-old man. You know, she was the most beautiful, amazing woman in the world. I was completely in love with her. I still am, really, if I'm honest. But, and I'm reminded of that in a few episodes. I'm reminded of that when her and Angel have their kind of moments of like, when she tells him she loves him, oh my God, I like still melt now. Just, it's almost as if she's looking into camera, looking at me and saying it. okay. In my head, anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my head canon. But yeah, her as a performer, I would, you know, when we come to do the 21 lens, you know, what we're looking at now through a different perspective. She's really amazing in this season, actually, and I think that's worth going into in some detail. What about you?
Yeah, no, so for me, and it's, I didn't watch them back to back, but because the season one was a second half fill-in, you know, so it was on the WB network, and so it didn't come out until the, so season one and season two were in the same calendar year, you know, the first half of season two. So there was only a few months break between the end of season one and the beginning of season two for me as well. I recorded a lot of season one, so it's a lot of rewatch, you know, on old VHS tapes with commercials and everything. I wish I still had those to see what the commercials must have been. That would have been super cool. Yeah, so for me, my memory of this was, and again, I know we'll talk about this in months down the line. My memory told me when we started this, when you and I worked out this idea, that I was going to end up saying season two was my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I was prepared to say that. I don't know, because on the rewatches, I don't know. But that was, so I came into season two. But interestingly enough, I've forgotten several things about season two. The bad ones, the really terrible ones, which we'll talk about later. So my memory of season two was, this is my favorite season. And so I came into it with really high hopes, because this sets the table. Oz comes in, which is so important. And, you know, his Seth Green's natural charm, that this is when the guest spots start. This is when we get more bands, real bands showing up. So I just felt like this was the evolution of it. So while it may not in the end of the day be the best, I was prepared for season two to be my favorite. And if anybody had asked me before we did this, what's your favorite season, Buffy, I would have said season two. Spike and Drew, we get one view, one quick look at Darla. She's not in it enough, but she's back just to remind us how amazing of an actor she is. Rabia Lamorte, who's later goes to Rabia Scott, who's Jenny Calendar, is ace. You know, it's like, it really is. Charisma Carpenter reminds everybody what a great actor she is when they give her something to do. So I just thought season two, my memory of it was, wow, that was the strongest and best. So on the rewatch again, I don't know. I'm not sure if I'll say it's my favorite. But that's how I came into it. So that was my memory of it.
That's really interesting, because I know it rates really highly, doesn't it? In a lot of, you know, series end like polls, too often rates right up at the top. I did find it quite up and down actually on this rewatch. The highs are really high, but there are some season one lows.
Yeah, and I think what it is, I like that you actually brought it down to right. That's right. Yeah, but I think what everybody needs to understand too is that it's a memory hole, right? So this was, I mean, my memory of it, and I watched it, and we talked last week, I did some rewatches with the kids, but it was still, even then, you can just select, like, especially when you're in control of it, you can be like, I'm just going to skip that one.
Yeah.
And so you can create your own perfect season of season two by skipping the stinkers. And that's probably what I did. And that's why my memory of it was different. So that's why this is so fun, is to go back through and be like, oh, right, when I have to watch them all. It's a different season. So you're right, the highs are super high. The lows are definitely super low. The plot, everybody, if you've not watched season two of Buffy and you're listening to this, is essentially the big bad is Spike and Drew, right? Would you agree, or would you think Angel's the big bad?
I would probably say Angel's the big bad, yeah.
Okay.
And that's spoilers, everybody.
That doesn't, when that's, we'll have that. Yeah, but he doesn't, not until what, two thirds of the way does he turn.
Quite. Yeah. So,
but you're right. But it's such a buildup. It's such, I think that's what I remembered, was the connective tissue of this season with Spike and Drew. So again, the memory says Spike and Drew are the big bad, but you're right. Angel turns bad, everybody. And we'll talk when we get to those, when we talk about that, we'll see if that, if that's good math, or is mass, as you guys would say. I'm not sure if that math works out for me. So I'll be interested to hear what you have to say. So, so essentially season two is their junior year for the gang. The Scooby gang is used, that term is used for the first time.
Yeah.
Season two. We meet Oz, who is played by Seth Green, who is a year older. He is a member of Dingoes Ate My Baby, of course. And Jenny Callender is more prominent. We meet Willie. Mm. We meet Jonathan for the first time in season two. Who else do we meet in season two?
Certainly he becomes a character in season two. He may have been in the background somewhere, but yeah, definitely. Yeah, Jonathan, we meet.
Yeah. Anybody else that we first meet in season two before we start digging in that are important?
Larry, he's a minor character, but yeah, Willie definitely. Larry as well. He's like another minor character within the Sunnydale Halls. Yeah, that may be it, mightn't it?
And of course, the principal.
Snyder takes a much.
What's that?
Snyder takes a leading role, doesn't he? And also he mentions a character who we're going to meet very soon as well. We get the mention of that. So those seeds are sown.
Yeah, it's weird going in. I wonder when they knew, and again, bad research on my part. I wonder when they knew, or if they did that to make sure they got renewed for season three. Because it seems about halfway through when we learn what Snyder knows. Just like in one quick conversation, and then they don't mention it again until later when it's like the big bad for season three is touched upon. So it is an interesting season of the structure of the rest of the universe is built, right? Oh, and of course, Kendra.
Oh, of course, Kendra. Yeah, just that small part. When it, because the hints to the wide world do come in early, don't they? Come in episode three after School Hard, after Spike invades the school, because we get the final scene with the police outside and Snyder saying, I can't remember, because there's a couple of episodes now, they come up with an excuse about it.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And they come up with an excuse for it. PCB, that's right. Because then later on they talk about like a gas pocket. And so it's quite early, isn't it, that there clearly is a wider conspiracy that's been hinted at.
It's pretty cool. And I've forgotten that. I'd forgotten before this rewatch how much Snyder knew. And like, obviously we know later, like in season three, you know what he knows. But I didn't realize, you're right, I was shocked when it was in episode three. I'm like, what? I had totally forgotten that you found that out that early in this run.
Yeah, I do find it a little bit problematic at times because I don't know. He knows there's something going on, but his relationship with Buffy is a little bit problematic, as in, does he know she's the Slayer? Doesn't he? I'm not sure. And if he does, like, to skip to the finale, the joy of, like, expelling her from the school in the finale doesn't quite track. I don't know. I think there are a few little issues where they hadn't quite got it right. They didn't quite know where it was all going, I don't think. I think they knew they had this idea, but not quite what they were going to do with it yet. But, you know, they're minor gripes, really, against the larger kind of the fun of the larger conspiracy, which definitely works.
Oh, I agree. And I think that's always the problem with episodic TV, hour-long episodic TV. It's hard, especially when you have different writers coming in. You know, you have different directors who you have then you have to make it fit 44 minutes or however long you have. So editors who are generally working with the directors, but not the writers. So someone wrote an episode with knowing like this is going to pay off later, but then the director does something, which is fine because that fits the scene, that fits the mood, that fits the weather. Sometimes you can't predict. So the director has to call an audible. And then the editor is really the final person. So we have no idea. That's also where sometimes those inconsistencies aren't bad writing. It's we literally ran out of time and the editor couldn't go back to the writer. The writer's not standing in the room with the editor.
So yeah.
The editor is the one who tells the final story. And so I think that's where some of that, maybe there was some throwaway lines that were like, well, this doesn't move this particular Monster of the Week story along. so I'm cutting it. And we're like, well, that really would have helped. I have no idea. I'm just could be fan fixing it. I don't know.
No, I think that's fair. It makes, and, you know, 20, as you said, you know, an hour long with adverts for 22 episodes. I wouldn't want to be the continuity editor on that. It must be a really hard job.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And that's why it always works best with comics when you have one writer for a run, because the writer is in charge. And yes, the editor is there making change, but the writer can be like, yeah, but I know that in episode two, issue two, I said this, so I need to have it come back later, as opposed to, you know, it being something worse. A big, big gaffe. So for sure. Just like we said in the original unaired pilot, Dingoes Ate My Baby was a band.
Sure. Yeah.
And then we didn't meet them in season one. We meet them in season two. So it was, if that had been the original pilot, that would have been, who knows what they would have done with the name of that band and everything else. So, yeah. Okay. Well, I think that covers it. We those are the characters we meet. That is, so the story is about, well, I don't know how it is. So let's talk a little bit about American high school. We did this last time, and I think it's important. So in America, you teach this level of child, correct? Okay, but you guys call it college.
At this point, we call it college or sixth form. Yeah, so they're 17, aren't they?
16, so 10, they're 17. Juniors in high school is what we call it.
So college or sixth form for us.
But now, do they graduate? So like for them, in American high schools, your junior year is kind of your most important year, because that after your junior years, you've taken all your standardized tests. We only do that once. I know you guys do that at different. This is why I'm just trying to get a sense of their growth as characters and why this year I think was so important to them as people, not just, you know, like, so you make a lot of decisions about your life. If you have a crappy junior year, that can really hurt you getting into colleges that you want. If you have a crappy senior year, especially the second half of your senior year, you're already accepted. So unless you totally blow the school up, you're probably going to be okay. I just feel like in your life, the difference between 15 to 16 and 16 to 17 is huge. And I think this show, even though all of these actors, I mean, Charisma Carpenter and Nicholas Brennan are 27, and this is the first time towards the second half of this season, you're like, how is Charisma Carpenter pretending she's 17 years old? Did we think that Cordy was held back four times? Is that what we're supposed to think? Like, by the end of this, like they quit trying to make her look younger. They just let her go out and look like herself, which was somewhat problematic, I thought. But anyway, this is the time when these people come into their own, and they're about to then, you know, they're 1 year away from being adults. So in America, you're an adult when you're 18. So you're being 17 is a big deal. You're on the cusp of adulthood. And what is it like there? And how does that kind of growth of characters reflect from your
perspective? That's interesting because, in terms of, I mean, we're the same here. So obviously 18, you're considered an adult. So that's exactly the same. But I would have said this, what you would call a junior year for us, we call like year 12 or lower sixth. I guess it depends on what area you grow up in. But that is almost the year that you can afford to not be as good.
Oh.
Because when you're 16, you take what we call GCSE. So that's like a big important set of exams that helps you move on to further education. And then you go to college and you do two more years. And then you do another big set of exams when you're 18. And that's what drives whether you're going to go off to higher education or go to university. So you can afford to have a bad year 12, as I would call it. And what that would either mean is a lot of hard work in year 13, or for some kids actually repeating that year, which again isn't the end of the world because then they set it right and they just have an extra year and they go off to university or place of work or apprenticeships or whatever they decide to do at 19 rather than 18. It's quite different, I suppose, in that respect. And I didn't know that. That's really interesting to me to find that out and put some other things within Buffy and other shows that I've watched into perspective with the importance of. Because I'm sitting here thinking, oh, well, she's got next year. It doesn't matter. She's got next year. But actually, what you're telling me is it's kind of done.
Because you start applying for... Now, the cutoff is February for most schools. But you can start applying. So, like, for all of our kids, this summer between their junior and senior years, they had applied. Like, we had already done campus visits and everything. Like, so most... All of our kids knew by, like, October... of their senior year, which is where they were going to school. They'd already been accepted. Okay. They had already done all that. So you're, so that's why the second half of your senior year, you can just fuck around and do whatever, because you're in.
Yeah.
You're done. You're locked down. You know, whether that's you, no, there are, of course, you can wait until January or February when the cutoffs are, but there's early enrollment gives you a leg up. So, so you're taking your junior year super seriously. So I just think it's to me, this like Willow sets herself on a path of excellence, as you see, and because of the way that it ends, like you said, with Buffy getting expelled, well, that pretty much sets her up for what comes in season four. Like, I just saw the breadcrumbs here in season two. I'm like, oh, this is, you know, it was true to what American. Now, I'm younger, so I graduated high school at 17. My birthday's in the summer, and my wife's the same. But for most people, you turn 18 or you start your senior year at 18. So you're an adult, so right. It's this weird thing too, I think, why there's less stress on that, because you can just sign yourself out of school. You know, it's like, and in America, with parents' permission, you can drop out of high school at 16. But if you're 18, and even if you live, you could just drop out of school and nobody could stop you.
Yeah.
So that's why this year was such an important thing. And I just think, so I was just curious how that was.
Yeah,
that's
good
to know.
Yeah, that really, really enlightens things for me, actually. You know, probably wouldn't have taken a lot of research to find out for myself, but no. I'm happy to get it from you're my resource.
And vice versa. Yeah. I mean, I know, you know, Mike has tried to explain it to me, and his girlfriend Megan teaches. And she says those things. She says those terms, like you said, GCSEs and whatever fourth form. And I don't really understand. So it's just fun. I read lots of books, but it really doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So it's good. So now I understand. So it must have been really bizarre for Rupert to be here and to try to understand the American educational system and be like, why does this? But, you know, he really doesn't care about school either.
No, he really, I mean, he has got bigger things to worry about, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah, right. Exactly. And I think that's a conversation we need to have too about the adults in the show as we move through it. I think I would like to do that a little bit when we look through the 2021 lens, as you already mentioned with Snyder and with Ted, and how the adult interaction with these kids. So anyway, well, I think we've done a good job setting the table of season two.
Definitely.
So let's dig in. What was your, and there were a couple of two-parters. So I'm down to say the two-parters count as one if you are.
Fair enough.
Your call. What was your favorite episode of season two?
So like we discussed last episode, my favorite and what I think is the best don't.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Absolutely. Yeah.
For a very particular reason. So I would say my favorite episode is Becoming Part Two. So actually the finale, which I know is a bit cheesy to pick a finale, but it really draws everything together that's been set up brilliantly. And allows actors to kind of stretch themselves in ways which will become important later on as well. Coming back to those central three, you know, come back to Geller as Buffy, Alison Hannigan as Willow, and David Boreanaz as Angel. They're pushing themselves in this finale. I think, yeah, it sets the table, doesn't it, for what's going to come in season three. And then actually, now you said that again, makes more sense, like forevermore in the show, really, with Buffy not finishing the year and getting expelled, and then, as we'll find out, disappearing out of Sunnydale. I'm a big Spuffy fanboy, so probably shouldn't be saying that in season two before you know, whilst we should be bangling. But again, this finale, there's something about James Masters and Sarah Michelle Gellar. They have really good chemistry. And that sparks off here when they team up to take down Angel. I can see why in the back of somebody's mind they're thinking, we've got to get him back and we've got to get him somehow working alongside them, because there's too much chemistry there to waste.
As it moves on, the only person, and I think it's him. It's his ability. He's a great actor. Like, he was perfectly cast. And later on, because he doesn't interact much with Xander in this, but in later, their chemistry is great. But him, even with Joyce in this, like when
that's
amazing.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's so good. And that is a scene I'd totally forgotten. That was blanked out my memory completely, actually. So watching that was like a fresh all again. I was like, what's happening here? And I was gone. I was in stitches watching it. It's brilliant. And that's what this episode does. It really makes you laugh, but it makes you cry. I mean, I'm not ashamed to admit, sat there having a good little cry to myself. I'm really fresh. I only watched it yesterday, so it's great. But my eldest was sitting doing his own stuff, watching YouTube on that side of the room, and I was here sitting having a little cry, watching Buffy. It was great.
Amazing.
But it's tragic, isn't it? And tragic love stories are the best love stories, right? They're the ones which we remember, the ones that mean the most. And as an ending goes for a series, it's pretty brave, I think, to kill off one of your main characters and have your main title character disappearing off and nobody knowing. I love it. It's a brilliant episode of TV, I think.
Yeah. So that's your favorite. So do you think... Well, okay. Well, I'll tell you my favorite and then we'll say what we think the best are. Okay. Halloween. Halloween is my favorite. Yeah. Because you learn about Ripper, first of all, and that's so important. But as Monster of the Week goes, it is... there's about 4-5 Monster of the Weeks in this season, which was good. I'm so glad that those still exist. Like, we can be like, here's something terrible that happens. Oh, by the way, Oz turns into a werewolf in the next we're not going to really address anything that happened. We're just going to deal with that. So it was like, oh, okay. Because I liked that relentlessness of Sunnydale. Like, you could say it's just one-offs, but it is supposed to, I think, show you that you have to be able to walk and chew gum, and that the weight of being the Slayer is important. And in Halloween, when Buffy loses being the Slayer for a minute, so several things happen. This is the one where we really see Sarah remind everybody that she's an actor. And then up to this, she had won Emmys working on an American soap opera. So it's not as though nobody knew she could act, but that first season, first seasons are always generally not great. And you gotta, if your first season is your best season, that's probably doesn't bode well for the show. You can see a spark of something. But I thought Halloween was where everybody, Allison Hannigan shined. Oz becomes an important character. Sarah Michelle Gellar playing that other version of somebody completely different, a totally different human being, was amazing. I thought Nicholas Brennan again, being able to switch gears and show off his physicality as an actor, which he normally doesn't get to do. And then of course, when we learn about Giles. So I just think Halloween is my favorite episode of the season. It was so fun. It's probably the one I've seen the most too. Like if I had to just, like from each season, you can just watch one episode from the season or trying to explain to someone what Buffy is, I would say because out of context, it makes nothing, makes no sense. Mm-hmm. But it's such a well done encapsulated story too, that you see Giles become these different characters from beginning to end. You see what, by them becoming other people, then you also understand more of who they are. So I think Halloween gives you a really good sense of the characters. And in general, I think holiday episodes are bad at episodic TV, that whenever it's like, oh, we got to shoehorn a holiday in, it's usually going to suck. This was just perfect. So Spike shines in it. If I had to tell somebody, I give you one episode to convince you to watch Buffy, this would be the one I would show.
No, I think that's a fair comment. I don't know if I mentioned before, I may have done, so excuse me if I'm repeating myself, but part of my units of work that I teach to lower years, to young kids, we teach Gothic fiction. So of course we do the classics, we do your Frankensteins and your Draculas and Hound of the Baskervilles. But if there's a bit of time and I can squeeze it in and nobody's going to catch me, I'll show an episode of Buffy.
You told me that. You didn't share that with everyone.
The world
now knows that they all need to send their children to you. I think
or not, as the case may be, depending on what they want their kids to learn. But I think Halloween would fit, it tends to be one episode and I'll just get it in and just have a bit of fun with it with the kids for a week or so where we discuss it and what Gothic features we can see in it. I often tend to show Hush just because that's such a powerful episode. But I think these kind of standalones where actually there's enough going on, as you said, that it could just be seen in isolation. And you understand that this is a girl who has lost her power. You understand that this is a guy in Xander's case who's gained some power, actually. And then you have your straight characters like Cordelia, who stays the same throughout, because of course she does, so she can make her snarky comments, which are wonderful in that episode as well.
Oh, she's fantastic. Yeah.
So that, you know, next time it comes around, it might be that I'm showing Halloween to my bunch of students.
That would be fantastic. The line about Cordelia was dressed as a cat. Oh my God, did she turn? No, she's just regular Cordelia. Like that moment of realization too, of how, oh, and that's how that's excellent writing. Cause that's the tip to Giles. Like, oh shit, it's something about those costumes. And so.
Absolutely.
And because Willow's so, you know, freaked out by her appearance, and, you know, being a ghost and everything, like she's not normally, she's the smartest person in every room she's in. And so it was just, again, great acting on her part to be flustered like that. And so it was just, so that's definitely my favorite is Halloween.
Yeah.
But I don't, yeah. So what do you think is, what do you think is best then? If best is different than favorite for you this month?
Yeah, I think best is passion when we lose Jenny.
Yeah.
From the opening narration to the closing narration from Angelus, the performance in it, Sarah Michelle Gellar and Alison Hannigan, in that moment when they get the phone call, is absolutely breathtaking acting. We can't even hear what they're saying. But the physicality, the physicality of their performance and the design of that with Angelus hanging outside and watching it and us seeing it from his perspective is really good. And, you know, we've lost a couple of named characters on the show before this, but this one actually really hurts and really sets up obviously the back end of the season for everybody. In fact, there's no turning back from this point onwards, is there? Kind of Angel's fate is inevitable, you know, come the end of season three, from this moment onwards, really, soul or no soul. I just think it's a brilliant episode of TV, but can't be my favorite because we lose Jenny. So, And although also we lose Angel in becoming part two, I don't know. It's that thing of like, you can look at something in Ikemara and say it's really good, but I wouldn't go and just watch that episode by itself, as good as it is. Whereas I could just go and, you know, stick on Halloween. I could go and just stick on Becoming Part 1 and 2, and it would still be enjoyable as an experience of an hour of TV.
Yeah, I agree. I was torn between that and the What's My Line episodes.
Okay, yeah.
But I feel like because that one took two episodes to tell the story, it hurt it a little. You know, and again, I mean, it's episodic TV. Sometimes you're going to have those continuation episodes. That's okay. But if you're just looking at one 45 minute episode of TV, absolutely, passion is well written. It's well acted. The actress, it always blows my mind when they've all read the script. So like you said, no, they have to pretend that they don't know. What I think makes it good and what makes you understand what Angel is. If you were on the fence about, is Angel going to come back? He doesn't drink her blood. He snaps her neck.
Yeah.
And it's so he can do what he does. Like, you don't know that at the time, but then later the reveal of what he does to Giles. Oh man. Because if he had just drained her, then he couldn't do that. It wouldn't work, you know? So and he doesn't turn her either. He doesn't want, like, that would have been a way to like make Giles crazy, is to turn Jenny. And that was always one of those things where I wonder, but I think it was just, like you said, it was tough. So I would agree that's the best one. The only reason that What's My Line was on the fence for me for being best was just because of the expansion of the lore. And again, the way that it also set up Buffy's future. You're right. This sets up the series and it sets up Angel spinoff. Like, I feel like with passion, they knew we're going to do this. We can't do it next week. We can't do it next season. We need a whole season to set up that season. And again, I think it was with Cordelia, with the actor Charisma. We talked about this last month too, that at some point she just can't be hanging out with these kids anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't, she just doesn't work. She, not that she's bad, but like what she looks like, she's a fully grown adult woman and and they're all adults, but she just isn't. She just doesn't look, she never did. And this season it gets worse. And in season three, you're kind of like, is that their mom? Oh no. You know, it's just, just some people, you know, just for some people, you can age them down. And the woman who plays Victoria on that show, Victoria Emma Coleman, you know, she was 30 years old playing 19 and she could pull it off, but Charisma just could never pull off being 16. Now she's supposed to. So I just think, yeah. Obviously they had to spin it off. So yeah, that I agree with you. Passion is so good. And it's a hard one to watch. Like you said, I don't know that I'll come back to it again. It's seared in my brain. I didn't forget anything from it. Watching it this time, it was like, oh yeah, I remember it. And that also is probably why it's the best, right? Because it's so powerful, you can't shake it.
Yeah. I mean, it immediately brings to mind an episode we're going to eventually get around to in season five, which also sears in your brain that doesn't go anywhere when we lose a major character. So you can almost look at those as from different perspectives as kind of sister episodes of the impact on others of the death of somebody within the group. They're obviously really important because the stakes are raised each time that happens, aren't they?
Yeah. And I think that's a great thing that you say is stakes. Like, we know Buffy's going to live. But and this is where, you know, and we'll talk about the Kendra problem as we go, but like the fact that the willingness to kill off characters, one of my favorite young adult writers is a writer called Scott Westerfeld. I don't know if you know who he is. He wrote the Ugly series and he's amazing. But he's not afraid to give you an unhappy ending. He's like, listen, kids. I mean, he's writing YA books and there's romance in them. But at the end of the day, sometimes somebody dies at the end, and sometimes the couple that you want to end up together don't. And that makes sense. Sometimes he gives you that happy ending, but most of the time he doesn't. He's like, and yeah. I'm 100% okay with him killing characters off. And I know it pisses people off, but it makes it better because there needs to be stakes. It's kind of where my Joker fatigue comes in Batman comics. Mm-hmm. And I know, sorry, Steve. And I know Steve says he never gets tired of Joker, and I get it. But for me, it's because you're not going to kill the Joker.
Yeah.
But I would much rather have him just come in occasionally and do something epic. Then every month there's another big Joker, there's the Joker Wars, there's another thing the Joker's doing. But at the end of the day, there's not going to be any repercussions because you're not killing off the Joker. You've made that, so there's no stakes. And I think Buffy this season shows us people could die. There are stakes.
Yeah.
And so it's, I just think it's super important.
Yeah, agreed. You know, she's the most prominent recurring character, right, isn't she, at this point? So we're not going to remove a main player off the table, but that's pretty, you know, it doesn't get any higher really than taking Jenny out. So there's definite intention behind that.
Yeah.
Did you want to touch upon What's My Line?
Yeah.
And the broadening of the world?
Sure. Yeah, I loved it because up until this point, we don't know, like, other than a few dreams Buffy has, and from the movie we know more, but if you're coming at the show without having seen the movie, the idea of the Slayer world and what the Watchers are and that there's a Watchers Council. So I just thought that's what I loved about bringing Kendra in. And the fact that the rules, the things that you think are rules, because the rule is when a Slayer dies, a new one is activated. And that is what happens. And there's no real good explanation until the seventh season when Willow does the thing that she does, when you really kind of understand it. But I think what I love about it is that Buffy did die. And so now we've got two at the end of season one. And so it was a nice touchback. But then it's also this moment of the rules can be bent. And up to this point, we don't think they can be. It's like, you're the one in all the world and blah, 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 oops, but we've got two. And so again, the reason I think it's important and why I thought maybe it's, but I agree with you that passion is the best, is because again, this sets up what happens in season seven.
Yeah, sure. Well, in three, of course, yeah.
Three, of course.
Yeah. No, I agree. The expanding of the world is great. And it's very clever, actually, this idea of like, of the death activating the next Slayer. And then of course, as we come to learn later, without getting too far ahead of ourselves, like Buffy's now out of that activation line, despite still being part of the Slayer lineage, which gives you so much scope to kind of think about her as a role. Yeah, I do really like that. I do really like these episodes. I think they're slightly pulled down by some of the acting within them, sadly. But yeah, the broadening of the world and of the universe is really important, isn't it? And as you said, like, really starts to show us how far this show can go. And I guess there's an important message there to think about as well, isn't there? The idea of Buffy's already breaking the rules, isn't she? She's not working by herself. She's not working alone. And Kendra learns the importance of that when she comes to Sunnydale. So it's not just that. It's not just that this power that this young girl has. We'll get into kind of the, you know, the white male, what's the word looking for, like, in charge trope later on, in later seasons. But it's not just that she's taken agency for herself and she makes decisions, and really she's the leader, and you know, she tells Giles what to do more often than he tells her. It's that she can then pass it on to somebody else. You can, so it kind of starts here, doesn't it? That idea, I suppose, which is really interesting.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it's the idea that, you know, you can't really ever work alone. And this is this idea of the lone wolf thing. It doesn't work. You got to give somebody, you got to have somebody to talk to. And you know, you got to have humor, and you have to have stakes. We have to care about the people. You know, it's the reason that Peter Parker is why people love Spider-Man, is because the stakes are real. You know, he's a kid and he's got friends, or he's got, you know, MJ, he's trying to love people, and Gwen dies. And so all these things in his life are real. And I feel like there's a nice connection between Buffy and Peter. And it really comes to the head here, because Kendra comes in as kind of like, well, here's what superheroes are supposed to be, you know, like, you know, she's a grumpy Wolverine type, like, I'll begrudgingly be part of the group, where, you know, Peter's always, you know, he's trying to keep everybody safe, and he does try to keep his identity secret, obviously, for as long as he can. But it's just kind of, I don't know. I just think that that's important that we understand that. And this is this the one that we learned that there's another Hellmouth in Cleveland, or is that the next season? Is that?
Yeah, that's, oh, good point. Later? I think that's later, because she's come from Jamaica.
She came from Jamaica. Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's right.
So I think she's just being trained there, isn't she? But
yeah, right. Because she's from there. And so I just think it's important to understand that there's rules, and the rules can be broken, and that there's, you know, this reflection of other superhero lore. I don't know. I just thought I liked it for all those reasons and thought it was important.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, and because then in the comics, Frey happens too, and you know, and so again, that sets, this is a setup for just. And I think that's important. World building is important. You know, everything isn't just Sunnydale, and that's good. You don't want that. You know, you
definitely. Yeah.
So yeah, that was why.
Aside there.
Yeah,
Frey. That's something we'll have to do on your sister podcast at some point.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
We'll tie it in with the end of this.
Yeah, we should, once we do. Yeah, because I think, well, and maybe, yeah, maybe when we do season 7, Frey makes more sense.
Yeah.
Frey has the axe.
She does, yeah.
Yeah, that was really good. I always thought that should have been a show. I think somebody missed out on that. I mean, it works better. And again, you know, comic books, the best thing about comic books is the budget. I think Julian said this, and it's true, right? The budget's the same. So you can do whatever you want to do. You can make the most amazing things for the same amount of money in a comic book that you could never make. And I think Frey would have been really expensive.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, definitely, we'll book that. Frey will happen. And maybe when season 7 comes out, that's when we'll do Frey on the Indie Comic Spotlight. I think that'd be a nice, don't you think?
I definitely think, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, awesome. Anyway, because 10 introduces Frey, it introduces the first. There's just so many things. Without them being introduced, they are in episode 10. So I think that's why. But you're right. Maybe it's the most important episode of this, but it's not the best, which is clearly passionate. It's not my favorite. And so I think those are valid. I think we've done a nice job there. Now let's be critical. I think probably our least favorite, not just of the season, but ever, is in this one.
I'm not sure. Again, I think my least favorite is very personal, actually here. It's definitely not the worst episode, but it's the only one, coming back to what you started with, like, I really wanted to skip it. I just couldn't bear the thought of having to sit through it. But I did it for the purity of the show. I made myself sit through it. So my least favorite is Go Fish.
100%. Awful. Garbage.
In agreement again. About it. Yeah, I just there's nothing about it I can get on with. The story is boring and is pointless. It comes at such a peak time of the show. And I know a lot of shows fall foul of this, of like adding in that one episode before the finale. But, you know, just before that, we'd had the Possession episode, like I've Only Got Eyes for You, I think it's called.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, which is a good one, right? It still manages to develop the story forward a little bit, whereas Go Fish hits the brakes and actually goes all the way back to season one.
It feels like it was a leftover from season one.
Definitely. And to come in as episode 20 of season two, I think the only thing I can think that's redeeming is that Nicholas Brendan Azander in his trunks.
It's hysterical. Yeah.
Beat out Daniel Craig in Casino Royale by quite a few years. That's about it. I can't think of anything else redeeming.
Wentworth Miller. I never am bad. I always like him. I'm a fan. I think he's got a weird charm about him. I don't know. Everything he's in, like his Captain Cold, I just loved his Captain Cold in The Flash.
No, I didn't.
He's just, I don't know, there's something about it. And then he's in one of the Resident Evil movies. He just pops up there and he's just got this weird charm about him. Like, I can't figure out. He's not a great actor by any stretch of the imagination, but he's just something about him that I'm like, I just like, but even that, he couldn't save it. The line in Go Fish when the coach throws her into the, after you've already eaten the lunch lady.
Yeah.
And there's like a really, he says, well, they have other needs too.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, dude, that's, fuck, man. That was awful. That was really hard. I blocked most of this episode out. I think I said to you offline. I think you said it right, though. It has zero redeeming quality, and it probably could have easily been in place of, it could have easily been in season one.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. It doesn't fit at this point in season two in any way whatsoever. It just, and you know, in any later watches when I'm not doing it for the purity of and sanctity of our audience, I'd just be skipping it. It doesn't add anything. There's no need for it. It's definitely my least favorite of the series.
Oh yeah, we agree both times. We agreed with the teacher's pet and now that. Lots of the same reasons. It's just gross and it doesn't make any sense. And again, gross. I'm not against a gross episode. I mean, and the thing is this has the one with the lizard boy, which isn't very good either. But
no,
this makes that seem. And Bad Eggs is also pretty bad. It really makes this one makes those, it elevates them.
Yeah, absolutely. Inca Mummy Go as well, another weak episode, but horrible gender portrayals aside, actually at least has a kind of a clever hook to the plot. I don't know what it is. I don't know if, other than that one line, I don't know if Go Fish is offensive. It's just bad. It's just really bad. Yeah.
The performances are bad. Again, Xander's given it his all. You know, there's a moment, Cordy has a moment there where she gets to choose Xander. So that is, I appreciate that. That is the only redeeming thing about it. Yeah. But she could have done that in a different way.
Absolutely.
We didn't need that. Yeah. But I feel like we talked about this too, the problem of 22 episodes. Whereas if there was a Buffy reboot, which I know has been bandied about, where it wouldn't be a reboot, it would just be like a new Slayer who just happened to be called Buffy. It wouldn't be like, it'd be Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but it'd be in canon. It would just be set now, not a reboot like the Boom series, where it'd just be like a young woman who's named Buffy, probably after Buffy, and then she happens to become the Slayer. So that would be fine. I would be totally down with that. Again, you probably have to put it in Cleveland, which would be because I would love to see, you know, vampire slayage and snow. I'm all about.
Yeah, that. Yeah.
I think that would be fun. But
blood and snow, definitely. It was a good combination.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. But I think that this season, all the seasons in general, suffer from them being too long.
Mm.
If you could cut if you could make this 15 episodes or 18 episodes and you could get rid of Bad Eggs, you could get rid of Ink and Mummy Girl, although that's where you see dingoes for the first time, but you could do that a different time.
Yeah.
Definitely go fish. And then Ted, we have to talk about Ted, obviously.
Ted,
whether
yeah.
we need a Ted or not. But I think if you get rid of at least those four episodes, you've got almost the perfect season.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, you know, as you said at the start, we still need Monster of the Week episodes. They just need to be good Monster of the Weeks. And in an ideal world, we can do our own fan cut of it where we just chop out the ones which don't feel like they serve the story, really, do they? They don't drive it forward.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, even Some Assembly Required is a Monster of the Week, but that's good. It's not perfect, but I wouldn't cut it. I think it does everything it needs to do. I'm with you. So let's talk about Ted.
Ted time.
First of all, I said to you off air, John Ritter was a treasure in my country. I grew up watching him on a show called Three's Company. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
I have not.
The premise of it was in the 70s, and the fuddy-duddy neighbor downstairs it would be scandalous if you lived with women who were just your friends. And so Jack Tripper, who's John Ritter plays a chef who wants to live with these two women who are just his friends. And so in order to get the landlord to agree, he pretends he's gay.
Right, okay.
And it was never played for laughs. It was never like... I mean, yes, it was to make the landlord uncomfortable, for sure. But John Ritter, it was never done as a way like they're making fun of gay people in any way, shape, or form. And for that show to exist in the 70s, like, because it was pre-AIDS, so you could get away with that. You know, like, everybody's like, oh, Will and Grace and Ellen. But that show existed in my childhood. I grew up with that show. And he was just great physical comedy. He's great. He can do serious. He can do comedy. His timing is impeccable. And I think, so before we start to shit on Ted, which we should, I just think his performance is spectacular and I'm a big fan of his. So it's hard for me to say what we're about to talk about, but I just think he's great. I don't know how you feel about it, but I've always been a big fan.
I know I've seen him in something, but now I'm bad. Yeah. I've done no research on this.
That's fine.
I don't know what, because I remember watching this for the first time thinking, I know that guy, I know him from something. So there's something from my childhood that he's in that I've definitely seen. Oh, okay, yeah, probably that then, yeah. That makes sense. I'm not a big fan of the special guest star of the week trope, just in general, because I think it just removes me from the world. Obviously, new people coming in is fine, you know. Bianca Lawson coming in as Kendra, it works. She's an actress, but somebody coming in as a name and trading off that, I'm not a big fan of. So I suppose that's an immediate stumbling block for me, even though John Ritter is not a big part of my childhood like he is for you. That's problematic. And then the actual episode itself is just, again, it's back to season one, isn't it? It's bad storyline. I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to get a bit more for the character of Joyce. They're trying to get a bit more for her to do, for her to get a bit more involved in the world. And they're starting to build up to that reveal at the end of the season where she's going to find out what's going on with Buffy. And now, you know, this is one of those pieces where she can go back in her mind and go, oh, now that makes sense. So we kind of need that. But just as an episode, it doesn't work. Which is strange because the conceit does. The idea of him kind of Silence of the Lambs style, taking these women and living out a life with them until they die or he kills them or whatever happens. That as a kind of horror conceit works and has been done in many other ways successfully. But something about it in this episode just feels off. And now with this 2021 lens of... of outside of Buffy, of Me Too movements as well, and but particularly of, you know, on set, how people were behaving, some of the dialogue is a little bit close. With that in mind now, I did write one down actually, because it was one particular one where right towards the end, when Ted's come back from the dead and he's a robot, and that's kind of been revealed, and he's glitching. And he grabs Joyce, and she says to him, "Ted, I think you might want to rest for a while." And his response is, "I think you might want to stop telling me what to do. I don't take orders from women. I'm not wired that way." Which, again, I get what they're doing. But
yeah, because he's literally a robot. Yeah.
Yeah. In light of what's going on, it's uncomfortable watching.
Yeah. I think that one, the line obviously in Go Fish is particularly gruesome through the 2021 lens. I think if and this is the big if, is if Ted were supposed to have been, first of all, it was just like, hey, remember how we did a shitty job with iRobot Me Jane last season? Let's just try that again, but this time with Joyce, and it didn't work. Same thing with Bad Eggs. They're like, remember how we did Teacher's Pet? Let's just try that again. So they took the two of the worst episodes from the previous season and tried to redo them. So that made no sense. So that is a problem. But I think in those, that that idea of it being Ted's a villain instead of, there's no satire there, you know, it's like, I don't know. I'm with you. It just doesn't work. It's gross. And they don't do enough at the end, having a conversation about why it was wrong. Just like, oh, it was just like creepy robot guy who's from the 50s. And so that's just how men were. And that's it. Yeah. Like, it's, I hate that excuse of that's how I was raised. And that's what that feels like. And I think that's lame. I think anybody who uses, well, that's how I was raised, is your excuse. Well, that's lazy. And that's you unwilling to like meet anybody, even taking a step forward. So I think that's gross.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, which kind of makes sense considering everything that's coming out, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's really interesting when you juxtapose that next to Spike as a character. And, you know, we don't want to go too much into what's going to happen in the future, but he says and does some things which are not acceptable.
Right.
But because it's continually addressed, and because he owns the mistakes that he makes, and he tries to grow and become a better person from the mistakes that he makes, it does make it acceptable. But we want to see characters grow. We want to see people try and bet themselves, right? And I'm not just talking about in the show, obviously, we're talking about in real life. Yeah, you know, none of us are perfect, and we all make mistakes. So Spike is a really good character for that. And he does some truly despicable things at times.
In season 6, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But in season 7, owns what he did and is trying to make up for it. There's never really any making up for it, not really, but tries. So I think your point of, you know, this idea of just going, oh, well, that's how it was, so what, it is really true and really hits home in light of the ways they handle it better later on, perhaps.
Yeah, agreed. I totally agree. And the other thing about the 2021 lens for me is the Kendra problem.
Mm.
I'm glad that it's Drew that kills Kendra and not Spike and not Angel. But the fact that you bring in a woman of color, this is the only one really, who's got speaking roles. Because even the Ink and Mummy girl, who was a pretty white actress, I mean, she wasn't, I don't know how of color that woman, like, you know, and again, I get it, an actor's an actor, it's fine. But so you bring in, and again, she was a villain anyway. So you bring in Kendra, you bring in this badass woman of color who is a juxtaposition against Buffy, and they're gonna learn from each other. And I think that's great. And then she dies. And then what makes it worse for me is that we know, and again, like you said, not to touch too far in the future. Then when you bring in Faith, she lives. You don't bring in, I don't know. So that's my Kendra problem through the 2020. I never liked it. It never sat well with me. And again, you get an upgrade in actor. You know, Dushku is a way better actor as Faith. She's just in general, she's an excellent actor. But if that was what you wanted to do, because you're thinking, well, this woman isn't a very good actor and we have plans, we need a second Slayer. And maybe they didn't know that at the time, because, you know, obviously Kendra's not, she's not going to be manipulated. Like Faith is the perfect person for what happens to her. It makes a lot of sense. So it wouldn't happen to Kendra. But again, it's just, I felt, just felt wrong. And it was the first time it's like, it's the, it's like, she's not only a red shirt, you know, from Star Trek, but she's also the black character in every horror movie. The black character dies first. And so I just, it's always been a problem. It just shouldn't have happened here. So that's my Kendra problem.
No, I think you're right. And I think, I don't think it's something that they, it wasn't purposefully done. You know, they just weren't thinking. And perhaps, you know, again, well, I'm not excusing that. It was a different era of making TV where we weren't quite as aware of kind of the depictions we were putting out into the world. And I think the intention behind her was good. That
I agree.
This is a big world and we can bring somebody in that's off color and is from Jamaica, supposedly. I'm not sure where the accent's from, but
we were supposed to pretend she's from Jamaica, right? We're supposed to ignore the bad accent, right?
But so you know, I think the intention was good, and I don't think there was probably any malice in killing off this one black character. But you're right; we can't help but look at it through the current day lens, and it's retroactively a poor decision that looks bad in a very white show. Yeah, definitely.
A very white show. It is a very, very white show. And so that's always sat poor. And they try to rectify it later with Robin, obviously. And he's a good, I like him as a character. I like his origin story, you know, that Spike killed his mom. I mean, what a cool, and we obviously we'll get there when we get there. So they definitely try to, but again, Spike's, you know, the two Slayer Spike has killed have been of color. Right? He couldn't seem to kill, but like, throughout this whole series, there's like, oh, like when Angel goes bad and they're having the talk about how she's different. Buffy's different than the other Slayers. She's better than the other Slayers. Well, she's a petite white blonde girl. So she's better than the, you know, Robin's mom, who was a, you know, that's where Spike's jacket comes from, is a, you know, she was like a Pam Grier type, badass, kind of awesome. And then the other Slayer he killed was Chinese, right?
That's right, yeah.
So you're like, oh, but you can't kill the white girl. So that just, it's really, you know, that is a problem. That's my biggest, obviously all of the other ickiness from Go Fish, notwithstanding.
Yeah.
There's that. So what else is on your problems from the 2020 lens list?
I think the only thing along this kind of mold, this kind of idea was the character of Larry in Phases in the Oz werewolf one. Mm-hmm. So we have the interaction with Xander where you know he's being misogynistic and he's leering over women because he's hiding that actually he's a sensitive gay man inside, and then when he thinks Xander has revealed that he's gay as well, like that kind of turn there, none of that works very well. And again, it's just where, which, what, so this is, we're probably 98 now when this is coming out.
That one came out in early 98, yeah.
So, you know, it's symptomatic of TV at the time, isn't it, really? But that's not to excuse it. We've got to look at it. And he's a character that comes back in season 3, I'm sure. He's still roaming the halls of Sunnydale.
Yeah.
I feel like he's still around. So it'll be interesting to see how they choose to continue to depict him, particularly in his interactions with Xander, and whether this uncomfortable kind of wordplay continues between the two of them. I can't remember very well, but that's the only thing that really stood out, other than what you've already touched on, in terms of things that feel problematic.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's all well said. I think you know, overall, I don't know if season 2 will end up still being my favorite season, but I think it was strong. I think it was less problematic from the 2021 lens than season 1. I think there'll be problems as we move forward. Obviously season 6 has some issues there. You know, we'll go through that. We'll get there.
Yeah.
But I appreciate what season 2 was for bringing all these characters in. Danny Strong as Jonathan, he's just perfectly cast, and he's so good in that role. And obviously he's gone on to win tons of awards. He's a writer now.
Yeah.
And he did the Hunger Games scripts for the final 2 movies, and he wrote The Butler, and he's a great writer, and he's just an all around. So it's just such an interesting way place for him to start. But it's like perfect casting for Jonathan too. It's like there's you know, you could say that's a problem. It's like, oh, the little nerdy guy, but you know, he knew what he was getting. You know, when you're a little person, and he's not like a little person, he's not like Peter Dinklage, like technically a little person,
yeah, yeah.
He's a tiny guy. And the fact that David Boreanaz and Anthony Stewart have it, and Nicholas Brennan are all tall guys. Spike, James Marsden, they're all big guys. And so for him, he's probably like 5'6", 5'6". He's probably a normal sized man because they cast these other people. It's just, yeah, because he's way shorter than Warren and Andrew later too.
Yeah.
He's just a short guy. And so I just think he's great in this. So I love seeing him. And then Willie obviously shows up. So it's, I think it was, I'm really glad we're doing this. I hope you're not going to get tired of it.
Definitely. No. How could I get tired of talking about Buffy and talking with you, Tony? Two things that help make my world go round.
That's me too. All right. Well, let's end with musical performances. We see Dingoes for the first time, but what was your favorite musical performance? And that will be our closing song. I leave it to you.
It has to be, doesn't it? It's Dingoes in Bewitched, Bothered and Bewildered, I think. Yeah. How can it be anything else?
Yeah. Yeah.
We've been waiting to get them and now they're here.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're in it twice, but I think, and they're in the ones they're in Bewitched, Bothered and Bewildered, and they're in Ink and Mum and Girl. But Pain, which is really, the band is actually called Four Star Mary. We will definitely go out with Dingoes. And obviously, we'll have to remember Bewitched, Bewildered when we get to Once More With Feeling. I had forgotten that Xander never learns.
Sure. Yes. Very good point.
So it's like, as I'm watching this, I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Oh my God, dude, you did this once. What is wrong with you? Yeah, but is that, again, episodic TV, or are we as the audience supposed to be like, dude, why don't you just ever learn anything ever?
Yeah.
So anyway, cool. Well, we'll end with Four Star Mary's / Dingoes Ate My Baby Pain. So where can everybody find you on the internet, Jack?
I am most active on Twitter under I Am Jack's Musings. That's J-A-C-S. I publish all my, as you pointed out, thank you, my random thoughts on WordPress, but you'll find them on my Twitter as well, delving from one or two lines to a bit more in depth, depending on how I'm feeling on the day or how inspired I am. And now I'm lucky enough to be part of this lovely Comics Emotion family. So I'm here with you, and I'm starting to crop up elsewhere too. So yeah, I guess keep looking up.
This will come out before that. You did your inaugural appearance on Comics and Trail. We're actually going to drop this before that, Dave and I talked. So this will be out. So
All right. We
can tease that coming soon, probably in just a few days from this, you and Scott and Paul doing Blade Trinity and Comics and Trail.
Yeah, staying in the realms of vampires, and I'm still continuing to defend them. And no matter what anyone else thinks of Blade Trinity, I'm here for it.
Nice. And don't tell me. I don't want to know. I can't wait to listen, but don't.
Nice spoilers.
Yeah. Nice. No spoilers. So everybody pay attention for that. You should be subscribing to this. You can follow me on Twitter at Tricycle Boombox, or go to my website, AR Farina, if you want. If you want to send a message there, if you want to talk to us about Buffy, you should at those places on Twitter or however you want to reach us. Sounds like we both have people been reaching out to us. So that's been exciting. This has been fun, and we may have, if we can work the schedule out, next month Spider Dan may be on here with us, because season 3 was his favorite season.
It was, yeah, that'd be good if we can get that sorted.
Yeah,
I'm speaking to him fairly soon, so I'll drop it in with him again.
Yeah, see how we'll see if we can do that. But so thanks everybody, and you should be all supporting Lenovations Press, who's been sponsoring Comics in Motion, and our ads are in there this month's Section 12, which is super cool. And we're going to be giving away some Section 12 comics pretty soon, so look for that contest. And we're giving away stuff right now. We just gave away a DVD. So it's Comics Motion. If you're not subscribing, you're not getting free shit. And this contest is free. You got this conversation about Buffy for nothing. This didn't cost you anything. All right. Well, thank you, man. And we'll see everybody next month. Comics in Motion is proud to be sponsored by Lenovations Press, home of the world-renowned Tracksuit Man, the story about traveling to which we can all relate, and something we've all missed this last year. Lenovations Press continues to make the decades-long quest to bring quality independent comics to the masses, with 3 comics each year featuring the supergroup / government experiment gone wrong, Section 12. Click the link in the show notes for more information about how you can buy some high-quality independent comics. And stay tuned, because each time a new issue comes out in 2021, Comics in Motion listeners will be eligible to win free copies of Section 12. Click that link, check out Lenovations Press, support them on Patreon. You'll be happy you did. What started as just an appearance on Indie Comic Spotlight has turned into an excellent partnership between Comics in Motion and Lenovations Press. We look forward to bringing you some amazing content